what could be more healing than that unique frequency of yours moving through your body? And the act of saying, my unique frequency is worthy of being enshrined in expression and art.
Wake the fake up with my brother, Adam Roa. Thank you for being here today. It's good to get you on Wake the Fake Up because we're going to wake the fake up right now. How are you, brother?
I'm doing okay. That's the truth. You know that.
I
apologize for being a Debbie Downer right before this, but I trust that it's going to serve this conversation. That's why we're here.
I think so too. I think, you know, the resonance field that I felt from you over the last 2 days went along with the weather we were experiencing here in Laguna, which was this, you know, gray, a lot of moisture, electrical storm. Literally been sitting in that for the last month, and you brought that energetically into the home. But today, Eureka, sunny, gorgeous, beautiful. It's kind of lightened the energy, and I can feel that you've gone through the process. And whenever a friend of mine is in need of, you know, someone to lean a shoulder on or just hold space for, I don't need them to be a certain way. And certainly with someone like you that I know that has, I would say, access to their source code to be able to connect to their emotional body and their emotional traumas and all the feels, so to speak, and not just suppress and burden them. You're a master at that. That's just something that you do. You can tap into both the alpha and the omega very, very well. How are you feeling right now? But before you answer that, I just want to also say I'm actually wearing my father's wedding ring right now, and I'm wearing that because, you know, you hold a lot of the same frequency that my father held energetically. Wow. Yeah, yeah. And I can feel it around you, you know, because he was strong masculine type, but he was also had his feminine energy. You know, he held that container, which in my opinion is the true embodiment of the divineness of masculinity, of true empowerment and true energy and holding the fort down. And I feel that with you. And he was able to bring that energy into my life. So this is for you, Baba. This is for you, Adam. How are you feeling right now, brother?
Well, right now I feel lit up by that compliment and that acknowledgement. I feel, I know how much your father meant to you. So that's a compliment of the highest order. Thank you.
It's my honor, man. Yeah.
And I would say it's interesting for me to be someone now that is regarded as being so in touch with his emotions. Because that's not how I grew up. It's the opposite of how I grew up. I grew up with a Asian father, and my role model was no emotions. And the few times I had emotion, they were shut down. And so I learned that my emotions were not welcomed or safe in my household growing up. So I was really robotic and shut down for half my life, maybe more than half my life, till I got into a relationship at 23, and over the course of 10 years, really learned how to open up. And it's also why I turned to art. I've been writing a poem a day, as you know, and art has always been the safe space for me to be able to bring my emotions.
So when you were being, I guess, suppressed by the environment that you were in, you know, a father that wasn't emotionally open to integrate with you and to expand into those things. And you mentioned you have an Asian father and, you know, different ethnic groups and cultural groups. It just comes with the embodiment to a certain degree. Did you know that at the time? Were you feeling suppressed? Were you feeling like, I need more? This isn't the ticket.
I was feeling unhappy.
Yeah.
I was feeling sad. But I don't know. So for example, I grew up with a physical form of discipline, let's put it that way. And it wasn't until I was maybe in eighth grade that I learned that other kids' dads didn't hit them. I was like, what do you mean you don't get spanked or hit with them?
You remember that awareness of like that aha, like, wait a second, this isn't the norm?
Yeah, I was just sharing with a friend that, you know, I get hit with a belt if I really misbehaved. And I never, and then when my friend said they'd never been hit by their parents, it was just a what?
How'd you feel about that? Were you angry?
I don't think I was angry. I think it was one of those moments where my worldview just changed. I've had those in various, well, it's one of the reasons why I think travel is so important.
Yeah.
When you go to a place where people live so differently and can believe things and act in ways that are so different than what you know, but you get to interact with them. And so you see they're human. They have hopes and dreams and goals and all of those things, just like you do. It was a moment like that of going, wait a second, my entire worldview just expanded.
So pattern interruption creates new patterns and new thoughts and new emotions. And in that moment, as opposed to just getting angry and confused and why me, it was almost like, wait a second, the revelation hit you. There's a whole possibility out there. There's a whole nother reality that's going on.
Well, one of the things is interesting. I'm curious your perspective on this. I feel that, you know, emotional intelligence. You asked me, did I get angry? But as a kid that was so shut down and my emotions weren't welcomed, I'm not even sure I would have the emotional intelligence to, in that moment, necessarily understand what I was feeling. Hmm. And so I'm curious, did you grow up, spoke about your father having that feminine side as well. Did you grow up in a highly emotive family?
I grew up in a family that had a yin-yang energy going back and forth, and my father was the yin and my mom was the yang. So I had kind of what is commonly the opposite of what, you know, most people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you usually see it's the father that's more explosive and carrying that deep masculine energy and that threatening energy, so to speak. Whereas in my family, it was my mother. And so I was in the center of their never-ending battle and was almost, you know, collateral damage, you know, over and over.
Was it a power struggle? Was it like archetypal masculine? When
no. No. It was, one was in severe pain, my mom. It was in just emotional wreck and was tortured soul, so to speak. And father was just trying to splash water on the fire the best he could and trying to keep everybody safe under the roof, me and my sister. I realized it at a really early age that my dad was just holding on for dear life.
Interesting. Uh-huh. How did that feel? Like, because what age angry. Do you feel you
remember? I was furious. I was, you know, I was resenting my mom at 7 or 8, you know, and just grew to have major disdain for her. And I didn't understand her. I didn't, you know, here's my mom, immigrant mother from Iran with a strong accent and fighting in my dad in a foreign tongue. And I'm this American kid and was just like, what is this? It's almost like an alien in my home. That's how I felt. It's interesting that you're asking me this because that's coming up organically for me. I don't think I've ever really put it in those words. But I was thinking that my mom was from another world and this was a whole part of my, you know, experience. I had the faculties to get that this is part of a process that I'm supposed to go through. I realized that at an early age.
Really?
I wasn't a victim in it. I was like, this is like some kind of, you know, school of hard knocks.
So did you ever have anger towards your father for putting up with it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Good question. By the time I was 10 or 11, I started to mature a little bit and grow a little bit. And it wasn't me just an emotional wreck being involved in this, you know, melees. I was starting to grow frustration for my dad and actually started to resent him a little bit because it wasn't my character, to try to just appease somebody and just try to neutralize their acidity. I don't have that in me. To a certain degree, you know, you have a loved one and you're going to do that. But once it gets past a certain point, which we were way past, we were Grand Canyon past, it was time for him to stand up and, you know, put a stop to this. But he never really did. There was moments where he would step up a little bit, but it was very far in between.
Do you think that has impacted? Did you swing into, because I see you as a very strong masculine presence, very alpha male presence. And I'm curious, in your relationships, both with men, but specifically even with women, did that cause you to almost overdevelop that side of what you maybe wished your father had done and stood up for?
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah, I definitely was compensating for the lack there.
Yeah.
And probably made sure that I would never be in that situation or even come close to that situation. And that's probably how, you know, I've worked through relationships since, you know, my mid-teens and into my 20s was with that. And I felt like I had a lot of corrections or I had to correct a lot of things that had happened in my past in relationships. And I just always wanted to make sure that, you know, everyone was felt and seen. And I still picked up my father's softness to a certain degree because I'm gentle in that sense. And I saw the beauty of that. But at age 25, 26, you know, I was pretty chaotic and quick to put anything down, that didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And the sensitivity factor was pretty high. Mm. I wasn't going to let it happen to me for worse.
I think that's such an interesting idea. I've seen karmic ancestral relationships as being something where unconsciously our parents wind up causing the traumas and the wounding and the different aspects. It's the shadow side of them that they can't see that gets ultimately projected as an imprint onto the kids. And then we grow up and move through the world and ideally are conscious enough to become aware of those shadow wounds inside of ourselves and do the work necessary to figure out how to heal them and resolve them. And if we do that and we have the awareness to bring that back to our parents, we now are the medicine for our parents. We now are the embodiment and have the conscious understanding of what it takes to heal the wounds that they couldn't even see that they passed along to us. And then if we do that and heal in a really powerful way, we have just closed the circuit of that wound ancestrally and karmically, and it doesn't get passed on generation to generation to generation. And it seems like that's the beautiful design, so that by the time a parent transitions, for example, they've gone through the healing that they needed through their children, and then we're going to do the same thing and they're going to do the same thing and pass it along. But as long as that familial unit is kept in understanding of that process, even I think we would stop seeing this generational karma just get passed along forever.
I completely agree with you. It's, you know, that's why we're called to be doing the work, and that's why, you know, we have the opportunity to build a toolbox that gives us the 3, 4, 5 eyes to see inside of us and to see where the shadow lies within us. And I had that opportunity with my father over the last 2, 3 years, 4 years of his life to circle back into the relationship that he had with my mom and really dig into the experience and to get his perspective and for him to see fundamentally what he would have done different and how he would have handled the situation different. At the same time, I was also able to truly understand my mom's plight and who she was and what she was experiencing that was unbeknown to me at age 7 to 15. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 5 years ago that I actually was able to fully grasp and get the information on what my mom had gone through right before they had me. And so for me, that's a reverse ending of karma to a certain degree, because I still have that shadow in me. There's for sure. I don't care how many ceremonies I'm in, and I'm just being honest with you. Like, that's still there. It's still present. My mom still triggers the fuck out of me. I still see myself in dreams as that child, and I wake up angry, my fists are clenched, my veins are popping out. I have to go and walk around and breathe, and I see how it comes out in relationships and with my partner in relationship. And it's cathartic, to say the least, but it's interesting what you're saying is, you know, we have the ability, if the toolbox is there and we've taken the time to do the work, that we can we can close that circle. So that karmic loop doesn't keep going. But the fact that I learned what my mom had gone through, I was able to empathize and maybe not accept it fully, but understand, you know, what this woman was experiencing at that age and why she was in that state.
Why do you think it is that you haven't been able to fully release it?
I think I've found excuses to not go fully in there.
So you're consciously aware that there are places you just haven't been willing to go yet.
Sure.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
And it's not easy to say that. You know, I kind of like to think of myself as a pioneer in so many ways and expanding in so many ways, but call a spade, especially if you're looking in the mirror. And I'm opening up the tremendous opportunity for myself to feel better in this life and to live a more profound, expansive experience that's not, you know, conditional to certain things that need to be met. You know, it's the conditions that I set forth upon myself that leave me high and dry and sometimes hurt the people around me. And it's not serving. And so that's why you probably have come into my life. That's why I have, you know, amazing feminine around me. And I have been pushing some of this off because of excuses like I'm working 14 hours a day and, you know, I've been building a massive entrepreneurial company, and I'm so vested in the healing of the world. I'm so vested in the medicine and the nutrition and the wellness and the expansion and the higher levels of attainment and consciousness, you know, where the whole time, you know, there's just a bunch of roots that need to be, you know, placed into the earth. And there's some new flowering and new fruiting that needs to take place. And I know it. I feel it.
That's so interesting. I feel as if I did the opposite. I moved to Miami recently, and I'm surrounded by VCs and tech founders and yachts and all of this high rises and stuff. And
journalism.
And yeah, and it's $30 hamburgers. And I'm just
30.
Yeah, the Faena. It's a great burger, though. It's really okay. Good. And so it's interesting for me because I've actually been in judgment of myself for not spending the last 5 years building a business, like really building putting my attention into, I want to build a sustainable recurring revenue style business of some kind. And I've spent the last 5 years or so doing all this inner work, really looking inwardly and developing, to your point, every nook, cranny, crevice within myself, every shadow that I could spot, the deepest fears that I had. It's like, wow, okay, sexual abuse. How do I deal with that? Okay, iboga for 3 weeks. It's like, let's dive into that. Oh, wow, I'm having this issue over here. Let me go into that. And I felt like I'm grateful for it because it's given me, I've become someone that now is like the compliments that you give me are a direct result of that. You know, it's that work that allowed me to be this guy. And I just wanted to reflect to you that I have kind of the other side where I go sometimes, especially in the environment I'm currently in, where I'm living, I'm just thinking to myself, what would it have looked like if I had spent the last 5 years building business? Where would I be at now? And it's just an interesting, I guess the grass is always greener.
To some degree. And I appreciate you being open about that and transparent on how you feel. And I think, you know, there's truth to that. Right? 4 years before, and we're talking about Symbiotica for me, 4 years before Symbiotica was my deep dive into my dark night of the soul. I mean, that was when I was on a quest for inner wisdom, for unraveling the Maya, for pulling the mask off, deconstructing the false ego, the wounded animal, and really not tapping into, but really like hugging the lion within me. and looking it dead in the eye and being so honest to himself. And I lost 90% of my relationships from 2000 that I'd had since 2013, 14, as I was going into 2015. I basically was just shaving people off. And I had to go through that hyper cleanse. And then from that point on, it was ceremonies in the jungles. It was near death experiences. It was complete extraction from the material world. You know, you and I were going to talk about sports and Lakers and, you know, mixed martial arts and all that kind of stuff. But in that phase of my life, I had none of that. There was no TV in my home. I was a wandering hippie that had built a company that had done $2.5-3 billion in debt acquisition, Black Diamond Group. And I just completely pretty much walked away from it. And I had put myself in such a position to just go forward financially and be so responsible for my family and all those things. But I had that detonation happen, and my, you know, some kind of old spirit within me or a spirit from another dimension said, this is the only way. And I turned into an 8-year-old again. And I was basically operating as that eight years young child in terms of wanting to learn and experience and go through parts of myself that had become so rigid over the past previous 15 years.
What age was that?
I was 34.
And you did that from 34 to 38.
Yeah.
And then you started Symbiotica.
Yeah.
Got it. I'm 38 right now.
Yeah. There it is.
And so the last 5 years, right? So 33 to 38.
Yeah.
And I'm now turning my attention on building. Like, what is that? What is that next chapter? For me, it's building that business. It's really turning my attention to taking everything that has shifted within me and creating an external manifestation of that work.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's your golden ticket for being fluid. You know, we can have our cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. I think it's an illusion that something has to stop growing within you or your expansion has to stop evolving if you're doing XYZ. I think that's a mind trick that we play on ourselves. I can see myself falling into that trap. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a regurgitated lexicon or nomenclature that, oh, I can't do XYZ. I got too much on my plate. I don't have the bandwidth for it. I don't have the energy for it. And when I think about it, this conversation is just tapping into my brutal honesty. That's just me copping out and finding an excuse, because it's an easy excuse to not do the work. It's an easy excuse to not, you know, spend time dedicated to an inner craft or an inner development or a process of finding ways to rid yourself of things that are dragging you down emotionally, and will tremendously benefit you from future endeavors and future relationships, and will mitigate the escapism behavior. And don't get me wrong, there's part of this life that we need to find coping mechanisms. I think, you know, I talk about it all the time. I think you've heard me talk about it, that we're in a world of escapism. Mm-hmm. It's high level escapism right now. And our system is designed to take you out of the presence in every way, shape, or form. And it comes in every single sector, from entertainment to food to relationships to fear to debt slave capitalistic system to whatever it is. It's pulling you out of your presence, so you're living in pain, fear, and you have to figure something out to solve it. Now, I think we need to have solutions that help us cope with things, and healthy forms of coping, which is why I like watching Laker games, mm-hmm. which is what basketball represents for me, because I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 watching the NBA and playing basketball. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. Now, someone who's in other parts of our community that don't have that connection to basketball, they might not understand that. That might not make sense to them. That might make them lose respect for me and think that, oh, this divine masculine is not a divine masculine. He's actually running in old programs, and he's a slave to the system, and he's part of that capitalistic world and has no idea what true connection is. That's a judgment based on their own fear and based on their own emotional reaction. So my whole thing is, and I think what you're talking about right now is, we got to find fluidity and balance. So you've just done the work for 4 or 5 years. You've gone deep into every nook and cranny that's in your metaphysical and physical body. And now you, it's time for you to hit the pavement. It's time to grow the seed, but you don't need to stop what you're doing.
Well, I think that there's a, we had a root low to fly high.
Yes.
And so the rooting into something, the 3D, the material, creating systems, structures, even just habits, those sorts of aspects, I think are very, very important in order to continue to fly high, to build, to grow, to expand. And I think, to your point, I agree that it never stops because I actually see it as one thing.
Right.
It's not like, oh, now just the roots are growing and the leaves aren't growing. It's all growing. But I do think we have just a certain amount of capacity. We are increasing our capacity. That's the goal, is all of our habits, our eating, our consciousness expanding activities are to increase our energetic capacity of what we can do when we point our energy in any given direction. But I know it to be true for me, for example, is I can't do a 3-week Iboga initiation while simultaneously launching my next thing.
There's levels to this.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we're all going to keep expanding. And I think the key for me is to see it all as one. Mm-hmm. To see that when I'm actually going, okay, it's time to listen to Think and Grow Rich for the third time, and it's time to
Kiyosaki,
and when Napoleon Hill is the thing, and then we would go into my habits and my discipline, and I'm going, okay, what type of podcast am I listening to? Maybe it's time to shift from listening to kind of spiritual esoteric podcasts and get into listening to entrepreneurial podcasts and just get into the mindset of that. That is equal development. That is a part of my journey. And I, removing the judgment of it is the most important thing and something that I still continue to work on. Right.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. And it begs a question to me. I'm thinking about it. Are we evolving into beings that weren't operating with this level of sophistication 100 years ago, or are we trying to get back to where we were 100 years ago? You know, that's something that I find myself meditating on, and this level of awareness, this level of sophistication, being able to balance different forms of frequencies and tap into inner parts of our consciousness while fundamentally crushing the game in the material world and creating sound movement and organizing yourself so you're playing chess with life and not reactive checkers. Is this our evolution, or is this remembering what we had forgotten? What do you think about that?
I think that what we're doing is it's a game of applying the same energetic lessons to an increasingly complex outer environment. And so I think
We're up-leveling. To a certain degree, we have to.
It's as if every level of a video game, the rules don't change.
Yep.
In a video game, the rules stay the same, but the environment has now gotten more complex, more difficult. And so you actually have to learn how to apply the rules that you have been developing and the skills you've been developing on the previous level to a more complex outer environment.
Sure.
So when we look at, for example, to me, it's all algorithmic down to zeros and ones. Mm-hmm. That's how I simplify everything in terms of energetics, is looking at, I use this analogy, which is if you're looking at a computer screen, the people who are watching us right now are looking at a computer screen or on their phone or wherever it might be, and that's a visual representation of this moment, of reality. And they can interface with that because they're involved in that. Their senses are involved in that. Underneath that screen is binary. There's zeros and ones. Both are true. Simultaneously, both are true. They both coexist. And I feel that that's the same with reality itself. When we look at the sacred geometry, when we look at a flower of life, we have circles. When you add ones, when you add lines, you can create Metatron's cube and all of the plutonic solids that allow us to create the crystalline structures of everything in existence.
Yep.
And so we are synthesizing everything down to circles and lines. feminine, masculine. Mm-hmm. And when we get down to that level, I don't think the rules change. I think, again, it is looking at the yin and the yang, and it is a masculine-feminine dynamic always at play. And when we can figure that out within ourselves and externally, in modern times, I think the struggle is that the pace of our technological advancement is outpacing our ability to keep up with the rules. Like, oh, we're just figuring out how men and women might be able to work together in this way. And then suddenly we add in this movement of all these pronouns and transgender rights and all of that. And suddenly there's just a different, there's like a shift of like, okay, what is...
So it's like level one Super Mario, you go through it and all of a sudden you're nine levels up and playing King Koopa in the second round.
Yeah, basically. Right? Yeah, so and you still can just jump or duck or run faster or whatever. It's still the same mechanics. The mechanics are the same. And that's why for me, I try and synthesize everything back down to the mechanics. Because when I look at the issues that we're having collectively, I first want to understand the mechanics that are at play. What's going on sure. on that fundamental level? And then let's build on top of that. Because otherwise, I'm lost in the complexity without even understanding the rules.
Okay, so this might sound like a lot of mumbo jumbo here. So just follow with us. We're going to try to bring this back into something that might be a little bit easier to digest on the first go around. So tell me a little bit about your experience going through your heightened relationship to the relationship, you know, dismantling, all happening online to where you are now. Because you and I just talked about not having our relationships all over the internet and all those things, yeah. which is something I believe strongly in, just on an energetic level. Where do you see we're at right now? Just for yourself and outwardly towards the, you know, society right now, because it's crazy out there with social media and all these dating apps, and it's just a lot of misdirection, and people are taking in, people are taking in everybody else's experiences, and they don't even know that it's not their own experience, and they're just like projecting that out. It's just like a vicious cycle everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's, we have figured out, speaking to, are we able to keep up with the pace of the technological advancement? I don't know. You're familiar with Dunbar's number, right?
Yeah.
The amount of people that we can hold in our consciousness, really. And yet—
It's finite.
It's finite.
Yeah.
And yet most people follow more people than that on social media.
Oh, extraordinarily more.
And so we now are—
It's ruining relationships.
It's ruining relationships. Yeah. And it's also, there's an interesting take that I'd seen of how Instagram and dating apps and everything were ruining dating specifically for this reason, which is the illusion of choice, the illusion of potential, of the basically these people were going out and you're getting into on a date or two dates or in a relationship or whatever, and then you hit those bumps in the road, and previously you're going, well, this is my person. I live in a small town and I only know this many people, and this is the person I like the most. Where meanwhile, now you go, why am I going to deal with this? I can just swipe on Instagram or on, you know, Bumble later or what, Tinder, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that there's this illusion that is being created, which is a disservice to people and the health of a relationship. And I think that's really interesting, is how is social media creating an unrealistic and unhealthy perspective on your actual relationships,
that's
your
right.
real relationships.
That's right. I mean, if Adam and Eve were in the garden and there was 2 million Eves circling around, then that whole, you know, convergence might not have happened,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're right. There's too many realities happening simultaneously in every direction right now, and social media is the conductor of creating those realities. I always talk about how children are being exposed to, you know, 100 different realities every few hours, and it's pulling them out of their own reality. Mm. And that right there is a very, very dangerous game, especially in the development of faculties at age 6, 7, 8. These are really important times. The brain is in theta and it's memorizing through their own receivership of what they're witnessing and developing systems within their system on how they're going to operate in life. Mm-hmm. That's just how children are blessed to learn. They're in full imagination mode. And if they're being ripped apart into 30, 40, 50, 100, 2,000, 10,000 different realities, they can't grab hold of anything that has substance, and they're not able to develop faculties like empathy and true awareness and love and those things, because it's fleeting left and right. And that's an important. And same thing goes with relationships.
Yeah.
You know, you're right, we're dissecting or cross-sectioning the value of a potential partner, because that partner is not nearly as significant anymore. Mm-hmm. Because the options are everywhere. But everyone's doing this now. So it's not just one person who's living that life. Everyone's doing that now. Mm-hmm. And so that's a dangerous game. And that's probably why we're having so many issues right now, relationship-wise, and drama is so part of the national norm.
Well, I find it interesting that basically someone's social media following has become a validation of their expertise.
Yeah.
Suddenly. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about someone before this podcast started, someone who's I don't know if you would call him a relationship coach or but his content is all around masculinity, specifically his perspective of masculinity that's pandering really to the feminine ideal that in many ways is unrealistic, based in some truths, but also pandering to the wounds, sure, of the feminine. Yeah, well,
to the wounds of the feminine. Let's make that clear.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I find it interesting because this person has a large social media following, he is perceived as being an expert. And because he is now an expert and someone to be listened to, his perspectives carry more weight.
Sure.
And yet no one has any idea where those perspectives necessarily come from. No one has any idea of if they've been applied in life in a way that are leading to positive results collectively. And I think that how this plays in is, and my question for you is, because we both have social media followings and we both put out our perspectives as well. And I'm not, don't have a PhD in whatever the hell I'm talking about. So my question for you is, how are people supposed to now actually develop their perspectives in a way that's not just like for their wounding and makes them feel better, but in a way that is helping the collective?
Yeah, that's an important question. And that's something I talk about quite a bit. So I'm glad this is coming up, because I always preface a lot of my communications and any information that I'm putting out there. And I'm talking about spirit, I'm talking about inspiration, I'm talking about health, detoxification, expanding conscious, Rudolf Steiner principles, you know, clairvoyant abilities, those things. And those are things that are working for me in my life, mm-hmm, through embodiment. It's not just intellectualization. It's actually embodiment. And my whole thing is, don't listen to anything that I have to say. Take it as fact. Take it as a grain of salt and use your God-given discernment, because the whole message is about discernment. Mm-hmm. I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are offended by me. Some people, I call out their insecurities. A lot of people, I do that. Mm-hmm. You know, my message a few years ago was a little bit more rough. I've softened it up, because I've softened up, right? It's not just because I'm trying to adjust for an audience. I don't care. I don't play that game. And so if people can start getting information and using their discernment, then they have an opportunity to make a decision at that point. Mm-hmm. And that decision is basically, this isn't for me, or I want to learn more and I want to investigate more. And they're taking the ownership to investigate. These are faculties that we're not using anymore. Everybody wants the pill to fix them. They want the instant gratification. That's a poison. That's a spell. That's not allowing us to receive information and operate with our own free will. And they were probably taught that at an early age. I mean, modern school systems, you know, just anything that's state-sponsored school system, you know, a child is, or someone in high school or whatever, they're just memorizing stuff, regurgitated drivel, and trying to ace the test the next day. Mm-hmm. None of that information's carrying it over because they don't love it. They're not interested in it. It doesn't make sense to them. There's no direct observation about it. That right there is a habit that has been created in society today. And so someone wants to come on my page or wherever, and they're like, you know what, Sherry, you're talking all, you're setting all this information. There's all these clues here. Just tell us what to do. I'm not going to tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should be telling people what to do. They need to experience what the embodiment looks like. And this is why, you know, you brought up that gentleman who's speaking to an audience and feeding, kind of chicken hawking, in my opinion, off what we already know is obvious and what's wrong with, you know, unbalanced masculinity that's running amok. We know that. That's not rocket science. I can say the same thing. You know, I can just take this message and it's going to attract a big portion of people that are empty in certain ways, or they're in pain and they're looking for someone that can speak to them and reassure that their pain is being recognized and they're not crazy for feeling this way and all those things. But that's not healing anything. That's a disservice. And so to finalize what you asked me, we're being asked right now to become free sovereign souls, and the only way we can do that is building the faculty of discernment.
Do you think discernment? Let's put it this way: I believe discernment is arguably the most important thing that a man can develop.
I think
a man's discernment is everything, because the feminine by design wants to surrender into the masculine. And really that surrender is when we're speaking beyond a biological level of protecting safety, we're getting into, I am surrendering into the guidance of your consciousness, of where you can help get us together in mm-hmm. our growth, in our expansion, right? Yeah. And I feel like the discernment factor is difficult right now. I think it's a really difficult one. And so I'm curious how would you develop your discernment? How do you develop your discernment?
This is an epic conversation because I just thought of something that I've never actually thought of, because there is a biological approach to discernment where you're intuitively knowing. Mm-hmm. You know, the feminine has intuition that most of us don't possess. It's just part of nature, right? And so we have to accept that. And that's fucking brilliant. I love that. A woman probably operates with more autonomic discernment than a man. And I mean that because so you said the word surrender, right? Mm-hmm. In order for a woman to surrender, she's operating with, and I'm talking about a woman that knows what she's doing to a certain degree and is not in la-la land because she watches a bunch of romantic comedies and just
looking. An awakened woman.
Yeah, or in a way, yeah, awakened woman or whatever. Someone who's just done the work. She's had experience. She's been in pain. She's been heartbroken or whatever. She's gone through the work. She's done the medicine. It doesn't mean sacred medicine, but she's done the medicine. She's gone through the process. Now that surrendering is her intuitive discernment. Right? She's not writing a blueprint and analyzing every single aspect of that man. Where us, we need to find balance, a little bit more balance in our intuitive discernment and our analytical approach. And you're never going to properly be able to discern anything if you're not practicing it on your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. It's not this one cataclysmic event or this one big decision. No, it's every little thing that you're doing every single day. One of our main quotes around here is how you do anything is how you do everything. That's discernment. Discernment is the opposite of judgment. Judgment is based on fear. It's a reaction based on an impulse of past trauma, and you're projecting it onto the topic that just came your way. And so if you're flexing your unified discernment within your auric field and through your decision-making on a daily basis, like, how do you do that? Pattern recognition. So the Rosicrucian in me, and this is a practice I've been doing at least pretty detailed over the last year. I was doing it deeply in 2015, 16, 17, 18 when I moved into what we call it the sanctuary down in San Diego. And it was a very hectic time. I remember I was deep in Steiner's work and I was really looking at my life, and I would wake up every rise and I would go walk out naked pretty much out in, you know, we had 30 acres over there, and I would just walk around and experience this. I'm up at 5:30, 6 o'clock every single day. That's my clock. Right when I wake up, I'm ready to go. There's no lagging. There's no hesitation. And I was out on that land, and I would analyze every single experience that I had over the last 24 hours. I was looking at ways to get better in certain things, ways that I was feeling uncomfortable, how did my call with XYZ go? How's my relationship with my father right now? How are we handling things? How am I handling my stress load of all the circumstances that I'm having? Relationship stuff, every single thing, I was reviewing it and taking from it a lot of information. And that's something that we're not doing as a species anymore, or as a humanity anymore. Anything that's past us, it's gone, and we're not able to properly assess it. The only things we're doing is living in the pain of an experience without really truly discerning it and going through it. And so that is an exercise, and that's a Rosicrucian exercise. Evaluate every emotional response, every communication, every escapism fear, every non-violent communication, every violent communication, all the pros, all the cons, everything in between. And that's building the faculty of being able to be your own master magician for every single thing that you do. And that's not just, you know, for men. That's for everybody.
Yeah. I love that. And I would take it and add creativity to it. Mm-hmm. So, because in a lot of ways, when we're in review of yesterday, when we're looking through our last 24 hours, we're only capable of seeing that which our consciousness is currently able to comprehend and the patterns that it can recognize, right? That is the edges of our consciousness. By bringing our attention onto an event and allowing our mind to ruminate on it, we can discover new aspects of it. And what I've found is I see what is our consciousness? To me, it is really the faculties of us that can pattern recognize. As we can recognize more patterns, entropy, the chaos of what we don't understand, we would be able to see the patterns. I believe there is an algorithmic pattern to everything. And once you've gotten to Christ consciousness, God consciousness, you can see how all of it works. But right now, there's aspects of how everything works that are just beyond my current level of consciousness, or another way of saying my current level of pattern recognition. And the beautiful thing is that for me, creativity is the intentional process of deepening your pattern recognition. Every time I write a poem, I'm sitting down and I'm saying to myself, okay, I need to put letters and words in orders that I've never put together before. When someone's making up a song, it's different chord progressions, it's notes, and it's all a different way of taking the same inputs and expanding them in new ways. And that process is something that will strengthen within your mind. And in that process, every time I sit down to write a poem, you saw me this morning, right? Like, I had hit that frustration point of, I don't know where to take this. I don't know where this goes. And there's a part of me at the start of every single poem that thinks, what if you can't write it? What if the best poems you've ever written are already gone from you and they're done? When I hit those dead ends, I go, what if you don't know how to finish this? What if you suck? What if no one cares what you have to say? And I, in the process of writing, have to overcome those limiting beliefs and fears and doubts and insecurities in order to proceed and actually complete the poem.
Yep.
And to me, the edges of our consciousness are held in place by all of our fears, doubts, limiting beliefs, and insecurities. As we release those, if we released every single one of them, we would be back into oneness. Yep. And so even the idea of separation is a form of limiting belief, and therefore it is the first stage of consciousness knowing itself as separate. And so in that process of writing a poem, I feel I've created the microcosm for a greater version of it, the expansion of my consciousness. And the cool thing is that it's like getting in an ice bath. You do it over and over. I've never looked forward to an ice bath. I've never said, oh, I'm so excited to do this. But every time I do it and I get out and I go, great, that just became easier next time and the next time and the next time. And I feel so passionate about creativity as a pathway for our personal and spiritual growth, because it's a consciousness ice bath. It's incredibly frustrating almost every time for me to do that, but it is the process of strengthening my pattern recognition, which is the thing that's necessary for me to be able to sit in these exercises of reflection and see things that I couldn't see before. And also reinforce that part of me that goes, okay, that feeling of not being able to figure it out and the feeling of maybe I'm going to fail at this, and overcoming that and having something tangible, proof that I overcame that by a finished thing, becomes a nodal point for me. Of it's like if you put a star on your wall for every ice bath that you did. And so when you didn't want to do it, you looked at the hundreds of them and went, oh yeah, proof. And so creativity to me is my version of what you just said, of really strengthening my consciousness through an intentional process.
That's very well received. I love that. I mean, it's through the creative behavior and the creative movement that we're able to go into the depths of our soul. You know, that's why musicians do what they do, artists do what they do, and that's where they're finding true happiness. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're able to, I like how you said the nodal places, because you're basically creating anchors of remembrance, and that you know you can get back to there. And that's opening up pathways and access points and things of that. So if somebody's listening to this right now and they're in some kind of conscious amnesia, so to speak, and they're looking to expand and be able to open up their senses and go into more development, what do you think is the best way for them to find a creative space? You know, how do they know what creativity is to them?
I think that your compass to your creativity is your curiosity.
So what you're curious for, what interests you,
yeah.
You know, what's not based on survival.
And what you may have done as a kid. I think there's a lot of evidence if we just look back at before we took on all of those societal things or our familial things or whatever, what was it that you were doing? Were you painting? Were you singing? Were you writing poems? I was writing poems.
Yeah.
I stopped writing poems for years and years and years as I felt I wasn't a creative person. I was a logical, like analytical person, but I was writing tons of poems as a kid. And so I think we can see a lot of evidence of those things. And I always struggle. I think one of the aspects of it is the struggle of how much am I putting too much focus on things that I actually want to let go of?
Because instead of letting it go, you're just keeping it right there in Front Street.
Am I writing a poem about my relationship conflict? Is that preventing me from moving forward? Is it actually something that's holding me in the energy of that longer than needs to be? I think is a really interesting question that I often sit with and sometimes struggle with.
Well, are you able to get an answer to that over time? I mean, you've been doing this for quite some time.
Yeah, I know that for me, the poetry writing specifically is the safe space for me to actually put my emotions. It's a place for them to go. And I think that there's the old axiom, the only way that we heal when we feel, right? The only way out is through. So we have to feel those feelings. And I think that it doesn't necessarily have to be a poem, but how are we feeling those things? where's the permission slip we're giving to feel what might be going on in our relationship, for example? Because I think one of the biggest issues that I see happening between men and women is they don't understand or have a toolkit for how to process the challenges that they face. Yeah. And individually, they don't know what to do with all of this resentment or jealousy or fear or feeling inadequate or whatever. And there's a tendency for fight, flight, or freeze. And so the partner is either going to withdraw and start withdrawing from that connection, or the partner is going to project and going to create that fight energy and saying, well, it's your fault, unconsciously, a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of the time, that projection is completely unconscious. They're not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. And I can speak to that personally. You know, I've felt that before. By writing your poetry onto a canvas or a paper, do you believe that by it living somewhere else is releasing it from you so it can now live away and move forward and be over there?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And it feels almost like an honoring of it, mm-hmm. in a way. It's because I grew up in an environment where it felt like my feelings weren't worthy of being felt. And so what more opposite, more healing a path than to say, not only are my feelings worthy of being felt, my feelings are worthy of being enshrined in art. Mm. And that process to me is such a, it's for me. I wrote a poem the other day saying, like, I'm not writing it for you. I'm not writing it for you. I'm writing it to for me. I mean, I actually have it right here. I'll read it to you. It's super short, and it doesn't rhyme, so it's not my normal type of poetry.
I really like that, what you said, the enshrinement for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's 180 degree difference, mm-hmm. in what you were experiencing as a child. Mm-hmm. And that's choosing you and showing that you matter. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more powerful than that. Yeah, that's Thank awesome, you. Man. Yeah.
So this is really short. I always invite everyone to take just a nice deep inhale and exhale. My poetry is not for you. It is not written with hidden agendas or filled with mixed messages. My poetry is the place I can put the feelings I don't want to lock away. It's the safe space where I can express without judgment. It was my poetry that held my hand through the breakups, depression, and the suicidal thoughts. My poetry has listened to me cry for hours, and when I was ready, my poetry has reminded me of the silver lining that I couldn't see through the tears. This poem, like all the rest, was not written for you. It was written for me because it's my poetry.
And self-love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's what it is. And that's why I think I went through, at the beginning of this year, I don't know if we had talked about it because I moved, but I stopped everything. I didn't take on any clients. I wasn't doing any consulting. Yeah. I paused my online community and my mastermind stopped at the end. It's like everything. And I just took some time to sit and reflect. And I realized, I started asking myself the question, is there anything that I think would work for everyone? Is there anything I truly believe? Because there's different types of yoga and there's different types of breath work and there's plant medicines, but I don't think any of those
work. Universal modality.
Yeah, is there a universal modality? And what I came to is creative expression. Mm-hmm. I believe that every single human being on this planet would be happier if they have some form of creative expression in their life. Right. And I don't mean happy. It may not solve all of it and they're happy all of a sudden, but whether that's 1% or 100% happier, they'll be happier with some form of creative expression because your creative energy is the purest expression of your soul. Mm-hmm. It is your unique soul signature. It's the frequency of your soul speaking through you. That is your creative energy. It's your life force energy. It is your sexual energy. It is the energy that creates. Mm-hmm. And so what could be more healing than that unique frequency of yours moving through your body? And the act of saying, my unique frequency is worthy of being enshrined in expression and art.
It's the genie out of the bottle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. This is, you know, if you're listening to this, think about where are you operating in a creative space? You know, where are you expressing your self-love and honoring the beauty and the art, the artist within? Are you actually exercising that? Because if you're not exercising it, then it's rotting somewhere in your body. Mm-hmm. And your soul knows. Your soul feels that trapped feeling. We talk about being part of the hamster wheel of life and the 9 to 5 and all these things. And how many people living in this great plane of existence are actually operating with their art, their inner artist right now, that are operating with why their soul incarnated here to do? That's something that, you know, I ponder to myself, and I'm like, this world's operating in some type of spell, some type of modern day materialistic spell, just in survival mode. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. This popped up organically. I tend to want to listen to music that makes me sad. And let me explain to that a little bit further. I also like to watch movies that make me emotional. It's actually the most pleasurable thing for me. I've noticed that since I was 9 or 10, 11, 12, the movies that I always go back to, like Braveheart, you know, when his father died and his brother died, and then when they killed his woman. It's those scenes that I remember. I don't remember the battle scenes. I don't remember. It's those scenes. Mm. And then also, you know, a lot of the music, a lot of the trancey music or Radiohead or some other stuff. It's just, I always seem to be drawn to these types of emotional experiences. It's my greatest pleasure. What do you think's going on?
You and I are very similar in that way, actually, very similar. I think that we are here to feel. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we're here. It's what drives everything. Everything that anyone does is based off of how it makes them feel or how they think it will make them feel. Mm-hmm. And so that alone is an indicator to me that feeling may be the single most important thing that we are given as a gift. And I feel that when we are in the presence of something or someone that makes us feel, that it touches this remembrance of why we're here. Mm-hmm. And it's when it comes through art like that, there's also a feeling of we're not alone. Mm-hmm. I don't care how sad I am from a song, I feel more connected when I'm feeling. And I think that, you know, the real enemy to face is apathy. Mm-hmm. When someone, because apathy is not born out of something. Apathy is born from feeling so hurt so many times and so let down so many times and so hopeless and helpless so many times that it feels safer not to care.
Yeah.
And
you've severed the feeling.
Right. But feeling numb is not the same as feeling nothing.
Right.
And so we're still feeling underneath that. And we're just not allowing it to express and bubble up. And to me, even bringing this kind of full circle to what we were talking about, the emotions are our compass. The emotions are the thing that tell us something's off, something's wrong, something's great, do more of this. Hey, follow this path. Or, hey, avoid this path. This person's not someone who should be in your life. This person is someone that you should invest time and energy. Your emotions are your compass. And I think that we live in a world, to your point, where the society is being built to disconnect us from the truth of our emotions and replace them artificially with dopamine hits and all of this stuff. And it's something that I'll just add that men specifically have done to women for so long, and it's in order to control women. The men have shamed women for their emotional experience for so long, and women are teachers in that. The capacity for a woman to feel is unlimited. It's infinite. It's so outside the realms of what a man can even understand, because a woman has a womb, which means that she is literally connected to the void. She has a portal into the infinite from which souls come from. There is a connection to that that means that she has one part of her, no matter how small, in death, beyond time and space, always, that we don't have. And what men have done in order to control women is disconnect them from their emotions by telling them that they're crazy, by telling them that they're too emotional, they're too much, telling them that whatever it might be. And I think that, that's a little side tangent. I think that our emotions are so important. And I now take pride in being someone that's seen as a masculine man who is that in touch with his emotions, because I had a woman teach that to me. Mm-hmm. I had a woman open that door for me. And I've understood firsthand how important that is, and how important it is for men like you, who I look up to in so many ways, to have the types of conversations with you that I've gotten to have that are what to me has solidified this knowing is like, oh yeah, I fuck with you. It's not because of the version of you that was the kickboxer that loved to fight or whatever. The thing for me is seeing how much you care. Like actually being in those conversations and knowing that you feel so deeply, specifically, you feel so deeply for people that's what inspires me. That's the thing that brings me in. And I think that is something that our society is not rewarding. It's actually something that we are shutting down, and specifically men have been doing to women. And if men are listening to this, the reason why I'm bringing this up is you are doing a disservice to yourself by shutting down a woman's emotions and disconnecting her from her oracle.
Yeah, I love that. I really appreciate that. And that connection to the void is so clear. And, you know, a woman's cycle, you know, they're having a death every single month. And we couldn't even comprehend what that means in terms of their soul's connection to their spirit and the emotional body. Mm-hmm. It's just something we can say in words. But to truly feel into that, it's nothing you and I could ever understand. Mm-mm. And that's beautiful. I really appreciate your words, and I receive that 100%, brother, and that's part of the magnetization of my connection with you, is I see myself in you, and I know you see yourself in me, and we're mirrors for each other and can bounce ideas and love and information and confirmation and affirmation and all these things and create a soup of energy that's saturated at the end of the day in pure love. Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain extent is society has almost made you and myself, we almost become vulnerable to a certain extent when we're offering our emotions out there. And that can be preyed upon by so many people and be a sign of weakness. And it's something that I've had to work with and work on over the past couple of years, because there's so many moments where, you know, I want to just share with the world like what I'm going through. You know, there is a projection that I have everything. There's a projection that I have it all figured out. There's a projection that I was born with a silver spoon. There's a projection that I don't have a single problem in this life, you know, outside of me losing my best friend, my father, but there's so much more there inside. And, you know, and that creates an identity within me, which feels false. And then I get passive aggressive with myself and I go into this vicious cycle. And to be vulnerable with another brother, to be able to speak to someone about, you know, the traumas and the worries and the things that I have ruffled within myself, is the ultimate medicine. It's ayahuasca, LSD, mescaline, iboga, all rolled into one. And it's and it's based on real material world connection. And I think what men are doing out there today is, you know, we have a lot of brothers that are building communities and offering safe haven for those that have never been able to have a voice to be heard and to speak their truth with other brothers. It's just such a beautiful gift, and I see it happening right now. And it's spidering out there in so many ways, and I want to get involved in so many of these different communities. You knew that, you know, I was part of the beginning part of Sacred Sons, mm-hmm. interesting enough, and to see where that has spawned off into is just incredible. Mm-hmm. And these are the conversations that are going to lead us to be able to be the version of ourselves that we've incarnated here to be, mm-hmm. you know, and you combine this level of emotional intelligence with self-love practices of taking care of the body and understanding that this body came with a set of instructions, you're then giving yourself an opportunity to have a very expansive life. Mm-hmm. And this life is short. This is not something that just keeps going forever. Our souls perhaps do, but this body is short. So if you're listening to this, there's no time like now to really start doing the fundamental clearing within you and opening up the side of you that has been screaming to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so if you have another poem that you'd like to go shoot out or anything, I think this was a really nice first conversation, public conversation to be had. I was on your podcast mm-hmm. about 4 or 5 months ago.
The Deep Dive.
The Deep Dive.
Yeah.
And I mean, Deep Dive, Wake the Fake Up, they're yeah. kind of synonymous. You know, I really appreciate all the work that you're doing for yourself first and foremost, mm-hmm. which then branches out to everybody around you in your influence. And that's a key thing to highlight. We have to be loving and doing the work for ourselves before we can give instruction or try to teach anyone around us. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very important message to be received. So again, thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah, thank you, bro. Thank you for having me here and diving into this. And it was interesting to see where this went. You know, we were talking yeah. before this.
About we didn't plan any of this.
We were yeah. just shooting ideas of what was alive for us. And so, yeah, it's felt cool. It's also just felt cool to get to know you better in that way too. And I have so many actually more questions that I have. So I know we'll have another one of these. And yeah, I guess the poem that I'll do based relative to everything that we've been talking about, with the willingness to feel and, this question that I've sat with a lot, which is how do I make impact? Like, how do I make my life matter? What is that look like? And as I was sitting in all of those questions, I feel I came to this realization that what I'm here to do, someone asked me that, what are you here to do? I said, love life. The most impactful thing we can do for the world is learn how to love life. Because to truly love it, we can't turn a blind eye to it, right? We can't avoid certain aspects of it, because that means that we literally hate that part so much that we can't even handle looking at it. To truly love it is to embrace all of it. Doesn't mean to stop working to shift the things that we would like to see shift. It just means an acceptance of it and a willingness to feel it. And if we're unwilling to feel it, then we are going to ignore it. We're not going to work to make this world a better place, whatever that looks like, because everyone has different ideas. And so that's the basis for this poem, which I call Heaven. And so I'm going to invite everyone to take a nice deep inhale. Exhale. The most impactful thing that you can do for the world is learn how to love life. All of life. Show people that being happy doesn't mean turning a blind eye to the pain and the sadness and the suffering that happens here. Show them that choosing love doesn't mean ignoring fear. It just means being willing to feel. And those brave souls will always heal as long as they maintain the courage to feel. Because the fear of feeling is really at the root of every fear, which creates a fear of living, because feeling's why we're here. So you can fight the fact that feelings past have felt so freaking hard, but it's the very fact that you have felt all that that feels like the part we should celebrate, investigate, learn to navigate with ease. Your emotions are the gift God gives you every time you breathe. Energy in motion with the strength to bring a king down to his knees, and yet contained within emotion is the key to set you free. Yes, contained within emotion is the gift of what being human is, a chance to feel all of life from deep sorrow to deep bliss. And you might wish the two would split, but the twist is that they'll always coexist, because even the heartbreak you hate today had the way paved by a lover's kiss. And so you can write your list of how life's a bitch, but don't forget the asterisk, because for all the times you went through shit, it fertilized a lot of gifts. But if we only focus on what we lack, we can't appreciate what we've got. But with gratitude for what we have, we can see that it's a lot. And that is the difference between abundance and scarcity. It's not about what you have, it's about what you see. So the next time you forget how blessed you be, take a moment and focus on the next breath you breathe. The next time you forget how blessed you be, take a moment and focus on the next breath you breathe. And notice, you're right here with me. A miracle, a great mystery. Out of hundreds of trillions of stars and hundreds of billions of galaxies, somehow, some way, you're here today with me, and we all breathe. On a spinning sphere of chemicals spiraling through the universe, you were once one of 200 million sperm. You just happened to get there first. So how could you ever say you're cursed? You've been blessed since before your birth, and you might not think you have it best, but it could definitely be worse. And if you don't believe that yet, go tell the deaf what you just heard. And if you don't like what you see, go tell the blind how much it hurts. On your hardest day, when you really want to walk away, go tell the paraplegic how it's unfair. Share how you want to run from all your problems while he's pushed everywhere in a chair. And I'm not saying that life is fair or that it's easy. We all go through a lot. But as you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, don't lose gratitude for the fact that you walk. Celebrate the fact that you can dance and sing. Embrace the abundance in the very act when you talk. Because when you can spot abundance in the simplest things, that's when more abundance unlocks. The simplest things. Taste, breath, touch, smell. Did you know there are people with something called anosmia, which means their sense of smell is completely lost? So while they literally can't smell the roses, do you want to complain you don't have the time to stop? Because this life is the only one that you've got. And there are people who would trade places with you without a second thought. So no matter how many tears, heartbreaks, or bad days you pay, the cemetery is full of souls that know living is worth the cost. Don't wait till it's too late to learn that lesson. Living is worth the cost. But make no mistake, being alive is not the same thing as living. Just like throwing something away is not the same thing as giving. So if you haven't yet found your love of life, I suggest you keep on digging and allow yourself to feel your way through all the hurt and all the rage. And as you feel, allow yourself to finally turn the page. That's how we heal, and it might hurt like hell, but you'll have shown us we'll be okay to feel it all and still love life. That's heaven, and you'll have helped pave the way. That's heaven. Can you feel it? Heaven is here today.
Oof. Thank you, brother. That was well received. That was so beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for the space. I hope everyone really takes that in and sits with it a little bit, you know. So what will it take for you to love life?
Right. Really? Yeah, the contrast and the roller coaster poetic ride of that journey just took me through so much levels of gratitude. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, bro. Love you, man.
Love you too, Adam. Thanks for being on Wake the Fake Up.
Yep. I'm woken.